Hello and welcome to Queering Eve, a spoiler-free-ish podcast about the TV show Killing Eve, made by some queers.
Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm the one who has been very bad at, like, facing things and doing things lately, so much so that I currently have in my possession a deer skull because I cannot make myself message a person.
Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm the one who's been told by a coworker that I deserve a Nobel Prize in mathematics. And then I said that there is no Nobel Prize in mathematics. And then he said, well, that other one, I don't remember its name right now. But
did you tell the story about the no Nobel Prize for mathematics?
No, because I don't exactly remember. All I know is it has something to do with grudges, like cheating or something like that.
Yeah, I think Nobel was like jealous of a mathematician who had something with his wife or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Hi, I'm Naya, and I'm the one who has watched all of The L Word. And now I am a certified lesbian.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I never wanted this for myself, but Nina convinced me to try to watch it one time, and I got to the fourth season and then gave up. But now the latest tactic was that I got in, like, really into the podcast To L and Back, which is surely partly what inspired me to want to have this podcast. So I watched the episodes looking forward to hearing the podcast make fun of them, so that made it easier.
And it is worth it. I know that I referenced that podcast somewhere in my notes this week.
But anyway, the podcast has now reached the final episode of the show, and I am done.
Congratulations.
I was just surprised with the fact that I am the one leading this episode today. So as usual, I'm gonna ask Nina to let us know about some facts.
Yes, so this is Killing Eve Season 3, Episode 4.
Oh, I mean, I knew that.
It's called Still Got It, and it was written by Eleanor Cook, who has written, like, one other episode of another thing on IMDb. So I was like, come on, this can't be just another person who has done nothing. So I googled her, and apparently she is also a playwright, so one of those. And was directed by Miranda Bowen, who directed the previous episode.
Okay, let's start with Nico in a truck. Nico is in a truck, gets out of the truck, takes a selfie, and there are some people on their bikes coming by, and you are watching this and you're like, Nico's about to get murdered.
Yes, I think I also had this thought when I first watched
it. Yeah. But he does not get murdered.
Yet.
Indeed, he just takes the selfie. And we get a beautiful title card saying, Nico.
The title cards in this episode.
At first, when I saw Nico, I was just like, wow, this is everything we've been building up for.
Absolutely.
This is incredible. This is hilarious. But then it made sense for the episode, the way they were done, I think. So
yeah, I agree.
I enjoyed them, actually.
I enjoyed them. Conceptually, I did not enjoy that they weren't all the same size. It really bothered me.
I remember having strong opinions on these title cards when I first watched this season. And I was like, this is not consistent and I hate it. And since then, I have been learning to let go of that part of myself. So now my actual opinion is, this is chaotic, and I love it.
Ah, in line with the 12s. Values.
But we are in Poland, which we were not told by a title card at this point, but we know because we are smart people. So have either of you been to Poland?
I have. I've been there with my parents and sister. We went to this tourist mountain village, and it was the nicest place I ever stayed in. We went on a few easy hikes. We saw a lot of nuns. And then we went to Krakow. Yeah, I think that was it. I think that's where I ate borscht for the first time.
Nice.
Yeah, nice experience. Would recommend.
I've never been. That's it. That's all I've got. No story.
I've been to Krakow. I went with my friend and her mom and her mom's friend. And that was weird. It was generally a pretty nice experience, except that it rained most of the time. But I remember mostly staying in a very pretty place and eating a lot of mushrooms and going there and back by train, which sucked.
Mm-hmm.
So we see Nico driving around in his truck, being incredibly happy. And driving through these villages, we see some geese, and then we see him delivering bread to old ladies.
I really like this for him. I feel like it makes a lot of sense, the geographic cure, and just going with a job such as delivering bread. I think it's very smart. Good job.
This old lady agrees with you, because she's like, no, don't go back. You belong here. Which I love when this show is very subtle and stuff. Next, we see Nico in a bar again, having fun, being happy. Amazing how, like, he's just instantly all better.
He's a simple man. All he wants is not to be involved with a woman who is involved with an assassin.
Yeah. Nico thinks the waitress there is cute and is trying to flirt.
She is, I agree with him.
Yeah. And we see that Eve is texting him, and oh my god, if I had to text Eve ever, I would just murder her. I would be the one killing Eve.
Can we talk about his phone background for a second?
Yes, please, let's.
Tamara?
Yes, I noticed that it's some old man in a painting, and I had to Google it. And it's Isaac Newton.
It is! I guessed it! I was like, oh, is that Newton?
Did you guess it based on the picture or based on the fact that you know that Nico loves Newton?
It was, like, the background of it all was that conversation that he had with Eve. But I also used my information that I have about Newton to put these things together.
Good job, Nina.
Which information do you have about me?
Yeah. That he lived in those days when they wore wigs.
Love it. We have also some pretty subtle, like, hints that something else is happening. At, like, we focus on a figure in the background for a moment. And then we see Nico leave his phone on the table. And now, watching the scene, knowing what happens, I could spot Dasha in the crowd. And then we see Eve waking up in the office, and we get the title card that says Eve.
And it's positioned, like, above her, and it's terrible.
So Eve slept at the office, presumably because she was so scared that Villanelle would break in and kill her. She goes to the toilet to wash up and does not seem to be trying particularly hard.
She took nothing with her. I guess she took a sleeping bag, but no extra t-shirts.
Yep.
She is cool. A mess. She's a mess.
Anyway, Audrey walks in, gives Eve a strange look, and Eve goes to have breakfast, which is Bear's cereal at Bear's desk.
Oh, and Nico texts her.
What does he write?
That he's ready to talk.
Then Bear comes in, walks up to Eve, and tells her that she's sitting at his desk, and she talks about hot desking, which I don't know what it is, but it sounds bad.
Unfortunately, I do know. We are starting this now at my job.
So. No!
Please explain the purpose of it.
I'm so sorry.
It means that you don't have your own desk, but when you come to the office, you reserve a desk for yourself.
Anyway, Bear does not accept this. It is also his cereal that Eve is eating, so... God, he cannot catch a break. Everyone is eating his stuff.
Yeah, yep. Everyone is eating his stuff without asking him. He would be happy to share.
He does.
He made clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people just asked him instead of stealing his stuff.
All the disrespect. I do not approve.
Yeah, Bear gets treated a bit like shit by this show, by most people in this show and also the show. So.
Yeah.
There is
that. I
think
often fat characters do.
Yeah. What a coincidence. Anyway, there's some plot talk. The financials that they were looking into didn't lead anywhere because that dude was murdered. But then they looked into these other murders from the file that Eve got from MI6, which are supposedly like Villanelle's murders, but there's some mention of some person that I don't think we ever saw.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
So, blah, 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 there's this photo of the paprika spice killing. And Eve is immediately like, this looks familiar.
Well, she is an expert on female assassins, so that one I actually buy.
It does make sense from this perspective. It doesn't make sense from a why are we doing this perspective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, why do these murders even matter in this plot?
Indeed, yes. So then a package arrives and Eve looks excited.
She does that thing, you know, where she puts her hands on her, like, around her ears when she gets, like, really turned on by something that Villanelle brings for her, or, I don't know, like, with the perfume and stuff like that. It's her move when she gets excited about Villanelle.
Do you think she immediately figured that this was from Villanelle?
I think she assumes that's why she also, like, brings it up to the roof.
No, I think she thought it was from Nico.
Yeah, me
somehow.
Too. I think she thought at first that it was from Nico and then realized it might not be. And then she looked scared when she thought it was from Villanelle. So Bear figures out that it's her birthday and goes like, it's Eve's birthday. And there's a lone voice in the background going in the most flat voice imaginable. Happy birthday.
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah. Tracks with how much Eve is just like not a nice person to anyone. So I don't think people have any reason to care for her birthday. So she takes the package to the roof. Looks at it scaredly and opens it. And it's revealed that in the package is a cake shaped like a bus. Any thoughts on the bus cake?
Romantic. I mean, what a dream for a girl to, like, order a cake for you shaped as the location of your first kiss.
I know!
What a rom-com move! What a dream!
Truly, this should be in more rom-coms.
I know.
So Eve decides to throw the cake off the building. Well, maybe decides is a bit of a strong word, because...
For anything that she ever does.
Truly.
Truly, I feel like most of her actions are like, she does something and then she's like, what did I just do? What?
Yeah,
and here you can really see it, because the moment the cake is in the air, she has this huge look of regret on her face. And then the cake splashes on the ground and it's...
Kenny.
Yeah, I don't know even what words to use to describe this. It made me feel terrible.
Yeah, it also made Eve feel terrible because she starts full on crying, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, Jamie comes up to the roof and starts talking to Eve about her sleeping in the office.
And he asks her if it's her birthday and she says, yes, it is, which surprised me. Honestly, I was not expecting it to actually be her birthday.
Yeah. Oh, he also just does not follow up on that, does not wish her happy birthday or anything. He's just like, so, why are you sleeping in the office? And do you want to sleep in my child's room? Which Eve apparently is not capable of saying the word child. She chooses the word dependent.
I think this makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I think it's nice of Jamie to do this. And I also really like that we get to find out a bit more about Jamie. The episode continues with Jamie and Eve, and they are eating some kind of takeout by the TV. I was trying to see what kind of takeout, no idea. There's some patty that Jamie gifts to Eve as her birthday present.
That was adorable.
I think the whole thing is quite adorable. Like, it feels very domestic and comfortable. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, Eve is staring at her phone, I guess, waiting for Nico to reply. And then Jamie calls her out on that. And he's like, don't you like to have fun? And she's like, hell no, I don't like to have fun. And she also says, you don't know what it's like when you've chosen to destroy your own life. And he's like, wow, can you stop being so dramatic and, like, over the top, please? I suck as well. Let's talk about that.
And then they compete about who sucks more.
Yeah, which is a great bonding exercise.
They start off with some useless stuff that I don't care about, but then...
But, and she's immediately having fun. She's
this is
so thrilled to be learning about other people sucking.
This is how Eve has fun. Yeah, so she brings up how she was unfaithful to Nico. Do we think that's regarding Villanelle or Hugo?
I had the same thought and I cannot tell.
I think it's Villanelle, but I am not sure.
She wouldn't use the word cheated on her husband when talking about Villanelle. And it's like unfaithful is somehow more vague and she can fit her understanding of herself into that.
I also feel like she just does not remember the thing with Hugo.
Yeah. And he tells her about some drug stuff and a GBH charge, which... I googled and it is grievous bodily harm for anyone who didn't google that. Then there's this moment when she says that she let a person die to go save a psychopath, and I guess she's talking about Hugo there.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating that she remembers that.
Especially because he survived. I feel like if she found out he survived, she would just be like, didn't even happen.
And we're about to get more juicy stuff, but then Eve actually registers something that Jamie said and reacts to it, because previously she was just thinking about herself, obviously. He says that his best friend died because of the drugs that he gave him.
Then he tells her that she should never think that she's the only person in the room who
hates herself, something like that.
And what a lesson that is to us all. I think the scene ends with him saying that it's all about choices, and they clink their beer bottles and have a nice moment about it.
And then she can't sleep because the cistern in the bathroom is making a noise, which is something that he told her would happen.
And this scene is so dark. And this is where I will reference the L Word podcast, because in the last season, they kept on the people on the podcast kept on talking about how the show is consistently so dark you cannot tell what is happening. And it's partly a bit, partly... an actual concern. And I really felt it in this scene. I could not tell what's happening.
What happens is that Eve gets another text from Nico. And this text is a selfie he took in the first scene. And she then acts like a teenager in love, holds the phone to her heart in this teenager's bedroom, which I thought was appropriate and well done.
So next day at the Bitter Pill offices, no one has cleaned up the cake that Eve threw off the roof, which is so depressing. But Bear did find the Dasha murder, and
this is somehow relevant.
Yeah, it's like, I guess Villanelle is copying someone, which surely is connected to the 12, because no other assassins have ever existed. So there's that very good plot. And then Eve gets another text from Nico, which is like, are you serious about talking or something like that? And she is just like, well, I am leaving.
It's all about choices.
Yes, she loves to feel like she's making the right choices, even though she doesn't want to make them.
Yeah.
I am very judgy, like, this is not implied in this scene. I just have my own opinions.
And then we get to see her arrive in Poland.
And we get a little sign that says Poland.
Mm-hmm.
It's smaller than the name signs. And it says Poland, which is a country.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Not a village. So there's that, and Eve arrives in a taxi, and I just love to imagine that she took this taxi directly from the airport in Warsaw, where she landed. I absolutely think that's the case.
So she gets to a farm and calls for Nico, and she sees him, she smiles, he waves, and we cut to the next scene.
Yes, the next scene is in a city, not in a village. And we get the sign that says Constantine, and Constantine is in a traffic rush. And we get the little sign that says Moscow. Constantine is watching Irina in front of her school, getting out of some person's car and talking very briefly to this person and then going into the school.
This person who ruffles her hair and she hates it.
And then Constantine follows Irina into the school and orders her to sneak out with him.
And she tells him to ask her in Sanskrit.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I will not, because I am your dad and I am telling you to sneak out with me.
So he takes her to a park to talk about her mom's new boyfriend.
Irina complains a bit about her mom's new boyfriend, but it's not really clear what the problem is. Is he just annoying, or is he really terrible, or is he abusive? Anything is possible. And she also thinks that Constantine is just working for himself, and that everyone will catch up with him and that he will wind up dead, and she just wants him to have a plan.
And she tells him that he is full of shit. I remember when this episode came out, I was very excited about seeing Irina again, because the season finale of season one was, like, so good, partly because of her, and this was kind of underwhelming, I think.
Then we cut to Constantine bringing flowers to someone, which was very confusing to me, because just a second ago he was talking about making up with Irina's mom, and she was like, no, I don't want that. And I think if this was intentional, it was done badly, and if it was unintentional, it was also done badly. We are not visiting Irina's mom, we are visiting someone else, who turns out to be Charles Kruger's wife.
Widow.
And she is very shaky.
Yeah, she is very distraught by her husband's death.
She explains to Constantine about how Charles wrote her a very weird email in which he explained that a lot of money had gone missing and he knows who took it. And if anything happened to him, she has to forward this email to some people. And she does not know these people, so she was suspicious of it and did not yet forward the email. And Constantine convinces her that she should send this email to him instead.
Yes, he's being very helpful.
Yeah, and he will get her somewhere safe.
So what we, I guess, summarize from this is that Kruger did not in fact steal those 6 million, like we assumed, and instead Constantine did that.
Yes. Did Kruger know about Constantine?
Well, that's literally, yeah, what it says that he wrote in this email. That yeah, he knows but who like, took it.
So he knew before Constantine came over?
Nah. Why would he call Constantine if he knew?
I think he called Constantine over because they are friends. And he was trying to, like, warn Constantine that he knows that the money's missing and that the 12 know. And give him a chance to give the money back. We leave this lady with the promise to get her somewhere safe. And we go to Barcelona. We see Constantine has arrived to Barcelona. And Irina is calling him and he decides to ignore her. Constantine is looking at Villanelle, who is looking through a store window into the store. And then he comes up to her and scares her. And it's the best how she jumps and looks like a little offended and yeah. Scared. And this is such a treat, Jodie Comer looking scared twice in this episode. We
and
get
both
it.
Times, yeah. Like more than scared, she just looks offended. And it's so entertaining.
And then we cut to Villanelle baking and we see the sign that says Villanelle. And I figured that out in retrospect, but this is where we return back in time to the point where all the other stories also start at the same time. So we see Villanelle baking and she also stops to admire her bruise in the mirror for a little bit, which is nice because we also saw Eve do that earlier at the beginning of her scene.
I love how she says, "So not over me."
Yeah, I love that too. And then Dasha comes in and comments that her cake not only looks but also tastes bad and she should throw it out.
Villanelle continues to eat the icing.
Yeah, Villanelle seems to enjoy her own icing. So Dasha also comments a bit on the state of the place and starts just like cleaning up Villanelle's stuff a little bit, commenting that she doesn't deserve nice things if she doesn't take care of them. But apparently it does count if Dasha takes care of them.
And Villanelle is like, "Mom!"
Yeah. And she throws a sour cherry at Dasha. Dasha is asking how Villanelle's trip to London was. And Villanelle is like saying that she went to a Jack the Ripper walking tour. And Dasha is like, "Why are you lying to me?" And Villanelle is all like affronted, like, "I'm not. I gained valuable insight into Victorian gender politics."
What a good line.
Yeah, yes.
This is why I watch this show.
Yeah. Well, they have a cute little exchange where Dasha is basically calling out Villanelle for seeing Eve in London, which she shouldn't have done.
But Villanelle doesn't admit to it.
Yeah, Villanelle is like trying to lie to Dasha, but not really putting any effort into this. It's like, I feel like Villanelle doesn't actually think that she will convince Dasha that she didn't see Eve. I feel like she's just lying for the sake of lying because it would be boring and stupid to just admit to Dasha what she did.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
And I think I love Villanelle for it.
I think she is right to do so because both of them are doing their best to make an entertaining scene and they are both great at it. I love when Dasha tells her to get an ombre balayage. So good, but not to travel.
The gist of this conversation is that the 12 want to meet with Villanelle because she's getting a promotion and Villanelle is so like she
does a happy dance
when Dasha leaves, you know, not to give her the satisfaction, but I love her happy dance.
Yeah.
And I do wish she got that ombre balayage, but at least she does go shopping.
And I feel like she gets a haircut. Like her hair looks very straight.
Yeah, she must have gotten a haircut. And then we get to the point where she's standing in front of a store, staring into the store.
So we see it now from Villanelle's perspective, Constantine coming up to her and scaring her.
And we get another look at her beautiful, scared jump. So this is the moment where their two timelines intersect. I remember watching this for the first time and being quite confused about the timelines, but then at the end getting it, and I think it's very enjoyable and well done.
I love that the writers for this particular episode put a lot of effort into these little consistencies and tried to make the timelines work. And I also enjoy how they adapted the format of the episode to this storytelling method. But I do remember just being upset at it when I first watched it. So far, we've had a relatively consistent linear storytelling in all of the episodes up until now. And there is no reason for a viewer to expect this shift. So this made me extra confused about what was happening, because when I was first watching it, it didn't cross my mind like, oh, maybe they changed the way they do storytelling. Maybe that's what's not making sense in my mind.
I don't remember how I felt when I first watched it, but I agree that it can be a bit disorienting to have 2.5 seasons of one thing and then suddenly switch to something completely different. But at the same time, like, the alternative is to have one of those episodes where we have a new scene every 2 minutes. And I definitely want that a lot less. So I prefer to be slightly confused.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess I wish the show had been a bit more creative with its storytelling from the start, you know?
So anyway, Konstantin is not a fan of them continuing their conversation in front of the store or inside the store. He wants them to go somewhere more relaxing to talk. Mm-hmm. And Villanelle's solution for this is to go on a gondola, mm-hmm. where she will be jumping around and Konstantin and I will hate it.
But it is a nice place to have a private conversation, though I did spend most of the time watching this scene thinking about how they also fit a whole camera person in that car. They are talking about stuff and Konstantin asks Villanelle why she's so happy, and she says it's Eve's birthday, which I love.
Yeah, me too.
It's obviously not like the whole reason she's not saying everything to him, but just the idea makes me happy.
Yeah.
And Konstantin says something about, like, isn't it enough that you ruined her life and her marriage, and she's like, the mustache is gone? Very excited.
Yeah, this is an Eve birthday party gift to Villanelle.
Yeah. And then Konstantin mentions that he has been looking into Villanelle's family and that he can find them and tell her where they are if she helps him out with the thing. And they do the fun little thing where Villanelle says the things he's saying at the same time, and he hates it.
Oh, and I so love cute. It.
Yeah.
And this is where Villanelle's hiccups start.
Yeah, there is this whole hiccuping subplot. So Villanelle is up for doing this favor for Konstantin, and he comments that he wants it to be nice and efficient, and she's like, you're gonna have to pick one of those. So let's find out about that. Next scene is set in Lyon, which we find out from another little title card.
Have you ever been?
Oh, right. Yes, actually. Mm. It was boring. Yeah.
Mm. What were you doing there?
I don't even remember much about Lyon. I just know that was the first time I was on a plane by myself. I remember we watched Harry Potter in the cinema. Weren't you in Lyon, Nina?
I was, yeah. Oh, yeah. I went to visit my friend. I also don't remember very much. I know that I biked around a lot, like, it's good for biking. Mm. I went to a park that was nice. I did not watch Harry Potter. I remember we watched Notting Hill on Netflix.
I would love to go to this garden that we see.
Oh my god. It's so nice. But also, it's a private garden, which is offensive.
Yeah,
it's a private holiday house.
Yep.
Which is even more offensive.
Yeah, so Villanelle is posing as a gardener.
Good.
Yep, good butch look on her. and she's trimming some roses, which the lady is upset by.
The lady being, what's his name? It's Widow.
Yeah, Kruger's. We never find out Kruger. Her name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Ooh, misogyny.
Exactly. So Mrs. Kruger tells her that her husband particularly loved those, I think they're roses.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Villanelle was just cutting the blooms off, so.
She did not look like she put a lot of effort into learning how to pose as a gardener.
The woman is sad and talks to Villanelle about how sad she is. And this makes me wonder, where's her son? We know she has children. We know at least about the son who's graduating. Why isn't he there for her?
Oh, and she's not going to his graduation.
He is graduating and she is having a nervous breakdown.
They are both busy.
Okay, fine. I just wish people were there for each other. Villanelle is being like, why are you sad? You're free. You can do whatever you want. And the lady is being like, that's not what I want.
Yeah. The lady says, I don't want to be free, which is a quote that Villanelle's prison friend also said just before she died.
Season one.
And I feel like these two actresses' faces look similar, but maybe I'm just imagining that because they said the same thing.
Maybe. She says that she wants to be a family and she hugs Villanelle.
And then Villanelle is having her hiccups and the lady is trying to scare the hiccups away and Villanelle does again her little scared slash offended jump and oh, so good. And when the lady scares her, Villanelle also drops the garden shears which she was holding, which would have been maybe more efficient but less nice. So she decides to have some more fun moments with the lady and it's so good. The scene is so perfect and the music
it's
is
so
perfect.
Good. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Just, oh, it's so good. It's so good. It brings me joy.
Yeah, I think this interaction that they have is just a very good, touching moment for your last moment alive to be.
Yeah, Villanelle really took it to heart to make it nice, which
yeah,
I do appreciate.
I do feel like that's mostly because of the lady's reaction to her hiccups and the way they interacted.
Yeah, that it's mostly because Villanelle actually liked her.
Yeah.
I agree. But still, yeah. And here I believe that Villanelle's whole thing is genuine, that she's like actually enjoying herself.
I think them chasing each other in the garden is kind of sexy.
I disagree, but valid.
No, I actually see it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Villanelle chases the lady into a glass house, where she then murders her with a watering hose. She looks a little sad, still has the hiccups, and then calls Constantine on the phone to say, c'est fini. And this little call, I guess, is there to confirm that, yes, it was actually Constantine that ordered this kill.
Let's go to another timeline.
Let's go see what Carolyn's up to.
Frogs.
Yep. Carolyn is waking up to some frog noises. And it's dark when she wakes up, which makes me feel very depressed.
It's 5 a.m.
Oh, yeah, it's 5 a.m. Ugh. Yeah, and what's worse is that Geraldine is also already up.
Like, why? She has nothing to do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. When it gets light out, Carolyn is meeting with Paul. And Carolyn is blaming Paul for Kruger's death. Paul is, I think, trying to apologize to Carolyn for being tone deaf, which I don't get and I don't care.
He compares Kenny's death to his divorce.
Yep, he does that. And he also thinks that Kruger was the one embezzling money, but Carolyn's like, no, it was not him.
I think what matters in this scene is that they are at an ugly place.
I don't think it's ugly. I think it's tacky, but I would 100% go there like once just to experience it.
Oh yeah, I would do it for the experience as well, but not for a meeting.
So Carolyn is doing a thing where she's like, oh, you wish I could be useful. I could have been so useful if you didn't tell me to stay away. And then she asks for her office back, which I am like torn between. She's just asking for her office back to be petty so that he doesn't get her office and she actually doesn't care about it. Or she does care about her office and she was just being petty before, not giving him the satisfaction of him knowing that she cares about his office.
Ooh, yes as well.
It's both.
Somehow I feel if anyone, Carolyn is capable of both of these things.
If anyone, Carolyn contains multitudes.
But then let's go to a cab.
Yes, Carolyn is in that cab and she passes by Constantine on a street. He's leaving the area where she lives in and he is on his phone. Carolyn comes home and sees Geraldine and is suspicious of her.
Yeah, she's trying to be like, did you meet with Constantine?
Except and not communicating that.
Yeah, and Geraldine is like, I'm not gonna tell you, except also not communicating that.
There's the cringe scene of Geraldine just falling on the floor and she starts crying. Actually, it's not that cringe once she explains what she's crying about. Like, I thought that was a legit concern that I would also be upset about. So she thinks it's fucking weird that they haven't even mentioned Kenny once since the funeral.
Very sad.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense, but because she is doing it in Carolyn's house and there's Carolyn standing on the stairs looking down at her, that's why I feel like it seems cringy. I think in any other family, it would make more sense. It's just like, have you been here before?
What I think about Carolyn and Geraldine's relationship is that I don't want them to fix anything. Geraldine wants, I understand that she wants to have a relationship with her mom, but I really don't think there's even a slight possibility of that. I think Carolyn just does not like her daughter. And I think it would be better for Geraldine to accept that and just never talk to her again.
Okay, well, let's finish this part with some depression. Carolyn goes upstairs to have a lie down, as she calls it, which coming from her mouth makes me really worried. And then she just goes to her bed and lies down in her suit, and that like made my soul cry. That's like that in that moment I was like, this is what depression looks like. I liked this scene in a very sad way. And she puts on her frog sounds, lies down and puts a pillow over her face in an attempt
to drown out her cries.
Yeah. Right, I didn't even think of that. I thought it was like trying to suffocate yourself in a way where, you know, you're not actually gonna be able to kill yourself, but just acting out on that impulse. Mm. But actually, that makes a lot of sense. We have another person to go to.
And it is Dasha.
Dasha!
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 Well, we will contextualize this in a moment. Dasha is in a swimming pool, and we have, in my opinion, a beautiful moment where she swims up to the end of the pool and just lights up a cigarette while in the pool. I loved it.
It was good.
And then we see red heels arrive and jump to Dasha and a lady sitting on some deck chairs. And the lady informs Dasha that she has het hair.
And then... sounds like het hair, like heterosexual hair. Which, I mean, yeah.
Kinda, yeah. And then she also informs her that Villanelle is running around London pursuing her agent friend. So
the one who wears turtlenecks.
Yeah, which is not how I would describe Eve. But
yeah,
I guess
neither.
That explains it
to some people. We see now that this is how Dasha found out that Villanelle met with Eve in London, which she pointed out earlier for us, later from her and Villanelle's perspective.
That, and this is also when she is told that she must drive a wedge between Eve and Villanelle. Dasha suggests that she could kill Eve, and the Red Heel lady is not into that. She says that would cause too many troubles.
Too much chaos.
Yeah, she didn't say that. But yeah, she does want Dasha to drive a wedge between them, which explains what happens next, or what happened previous. Well, what happens next.
So the Red Heel lady tries to motivate Dasha to do a good job by telling her that when she moves back to Russia, people will be dancing in the streets, chanting, "Dasha, Dasha." And Dasha's like, "That seems plausible." Okay, so let's go to Poland.
We see Nico coming up to who he thinks is Milena, which is the old lady from the beginning of the episode. It's not Milena, it's Dasha. Nico brings her the bread. She says that Milena is at the hospital, and she asks him to fix the barn door. And he says he will do it tomorrow because he is a sweetie.
Yeah.
That is the role he is playing here in Poland.
Dasha then walks around and feeds some chickens, and then does not feed the pigs because the pigs have already eaten, and they have eaten Milena, which...
Yep.
I enjoyed that, actually. I heard that can happen. Pigs will eat humans. Yeah.
I saw another show that I don't remember which one it is, where this was a plot point.
Yeah, I wonder why more people don't dispose of bodies that way.
Most people don't have pigs on disposal, so...
Then we get the fun thing again, where we see the same scene that we have already seen, but from a different person's perspective. We see the part where Nico's at the bar, and Dasha is lurking in the background, and then steals his phone and texts Eve. So that was fun to find out that these texts Eve has been getting were actually from Dasha and not at all from Nico. So then we go to the next day, and we see Nico fixing the door that he promised to fix. How nice of him. And we see Dasha again lurking in the background and putting a tag on her pitchfork that says, "Still got it?" And then Eve gets there, and I know I shouldn't get into it, but I will still. So guys, how did Eve know that she will find Nico at this old lady's house where he is fixing her door?
Okay.
Dasha
texted her.
Okay. Because I was assuming Eve maybe actually like knows where Nico's family or Nico lived in Poland. I love this other interpretation, which allows her not to know that. So Dasha just gave her some address, and Eve was like, "I guess that's where Nico is."
Yeah.
Love that. Okay.
So we see Eve comes there. She's calling for Nico. All the animals are nervous about what's happening. They're all very loud. Nico waves his awkward wave, Eve approaches, and Dasha stabs him in the throat.
Uh-huh. And Nico falls down, and then Eve also falls down, and then we look at some chickens, and then we zoom out. And then we zoom into a train station where Villanelle is getting off the train, and she touches her neck?
Yeah, what's that all about?
It's saying that she got off the train when Nico got stabbed. Like, obviously, it's impossible that she knew that.
But... Villanelle has some kind of psychic connection with Nico, of all people?
It's ridiculous, but what we're supposed to think is that this is at the same time.
Yes, okay, so all the timelines.
Oh my god, really? Oh, I hate it. That, oh no. I guess it did, like, instinctually let me know that it is happening at the same time. So I guess that worked, but I also felt like that was very silly. And as we watch Villanelle
take her first steps onto this train platform, we get the last title page of this episode, and it says, Home.
And a sign that says, Krizmet.
Yay. Wow. Well, yeah. That's the episode.
Should we talk about Uti? In this episode, Villanelle wears four outfits. The first one is the dress that she wears in Barcelona.
It's very interesting to me that actually in this episode, we first see Villanelle pretty late into the episode.
Very late mm-hmm. into the episode. And first, it seems like we're just getting a little glimpse of her and that's it.
Yeah. Well, I hate this dress. It's wow. intriguing, but I hate it. She's wearing bright red flats. The dress itself is a long one, and it's made out of a sheer fabric, except there is like a bra almost incorporated into the dress, which is a lace and satin thingy. Like from the back, you can see the brass straps that this dress has. Oh. And part of this bra is this red thingy. Like it's like a red rope under the boob. Also, the upper part, which is sheer, has this, the shoulder is exposed, and it's like a piece of fabric that just adorns your arm. And then in the back, it's actually longer than that, and it falls to her waist. And the skirt itself is gathered. And also on the front, there's this weird gathered extra piece below the bra. Mm-hmm. And also with that, she's wearing some dangly earrings, which are plexiglass and golden. And the reason why I hate this is, one, it's not that visible in this dress, but my pet peeve is dresses that have a bra-shaped part that doesn't match the person's boob size. And also, you can see the underskirt. I hate that so much. That should be illegal. Because it's shorter than the dress. Ugh, I hate it. And it just looks like a bad ballet costume to me. Not that I know much about ballet costumes, but I understand if people would like it because it is interesting, if nothing else. But
thank you.
It's not for me.
See, as a more casual observer, I did not notice these issues that you had with it, and I thought it was great.
So the next outfit is the robe that she wears while making Eve's birthday cake. It's just a classic pink robe with some red flowers. Under this is probably pajamas, which are sky blue. And she has a red scarf braided into her hair.
Hmm, that looks really nice. I feel like it's the perfect outfit for that. Dancing while baking. Ugh, just good, good.
Yeah, I love how she really must have thought about, like... What should I wear to bake? And she really nailed it.
Right, because it fits the cake.
I love her.
The third outfit is the gardener, which is totally 100% a reference to The Haunting of Bly Manor, even though I think Killing Eve came out first.
Yeah.
She's wearing a green raincoat and this gardening hat. I don't know what to call this. And a gray t-shirt with a company logo and some gray shorts. She has a French braid and some, again, minimal earrings. And I think she's wearing hiking shoes.
It's a great outfit. And I think it's great for the whole chasing in the garden scene. Like, looks so good with that background and all.
And last but not least, the one she wears in the train station in Russia. She's wearing a blue turtleneck sweater, a beige zip-up jacket, some plaid pants. She is sporting some big rings and an orange hipster backpack. Also, as a part of this outfit are the headphones. And I think she has some shoes that kind of look like Doc Martens. I don't think they are, but it's kind of that style. But they have... They're like in three colors. It's black, gray, and then the tip is white. These are the four outfits. Which one is your favorite?
Look, it's the first one. Sorry. I really loved it. I thought it was so exciting and fun. And like, I wish we could see it more.
For me, I definitely have a least favorite one, which is this last one. Same. I just think it's so ugly. I really appreciate the variety that this episode still provided, but I wasn't super in love with any of the outfits. But my favorite is also the first one, because, like, I felt unsure about this dress, but at least I was intrigued, and I thought that Villanelle did look good in it, all in all. So, yeah, that's what I choose.
My favorite is actually the Gardner one.
Good choice.
I'm terrible, but I like this combination of dark greens and grays and maybe browns that she's wearing. Mm-hmm. And I really like that she's wearing shorts. We don't see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, I would wear this outfit, like, as a fashion statement.
I think you would look great in it.
Oh, yeah.
You could definitely rock that kind of gay.
Mm-hmm. Yay. Thanks.
I like, gardening that. Gay, that's a look for you.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Oh, should we have a Russian corner?
Yes.
Yes, we shall. Okay, I have quite a few points for the Russian corner. I think I won't get into Grismet. I'll do that in the next episode. Spoiler. So let's do the Konstantin in Moscow part. The buildings, when he's driving around the streets, is similar to what we talked about in season one, where, like, at first, I mean, yeah, it makes sense for, like, a Moscow-y kind of place, but then you look at them and it doesn't really make sense, and I don't love it. What does make sense is the chaotic streets. I thought that was very representative and
the
correct.
Terrible traffic.
Terrible traffic, terrible driving. Oh my god, that.
Yeah, I heard rumors.
Mm-hmm. That is truly the essence of Moscow.
About Russian, specifically about Russian highways, how they're like a death trap.
They are, but also not just the highways. though it has changed. The last time I was there, I could cross a street. This was not the case before. Like, before, I could only go, like, there are a lot of those, like,
underpasses.
Yes, underpasses. And I would only do that. But this time around, a lot has changed.
But also, do you remember in Ireland? Was that Ireland? Where it looked like everyone was crossing the street at the red lights.
Same, that is
my... that's everywhere. That's everywhere in the world. The whole world makes fun of Central Europe for not jaywalking.
But yeah, I also had that experience specifically with Ireland, that I had the feeling of, oh my god, they are just crossing the street for the red light, and when it's green, they stop. So now to the school. There are a lot of issues with the school, which, like, there are multiple parts of it, and I think each one on its own could work, but then together they don't. Like, on the school, it says that it was made in 1934. But then it is named after Saint Mary, which would not happen in Soviet Russia.
Yeah, but they could rename it.
But Russian schools don't really have names. They just have numbers. At least Moscow schools in Moscow just have numbers. But this could also work if it's a private school. And I think it would make sense for Irina to go to a private school. The name, going back to the name, it is called, like, the School of Saint Mary, but the word for saint is not Russian. It says Sviatory, which it should be Sviatoy. I don't know. The way that school seemed, it would make, like, most sense to me if she went to a private international school, specifically because of all the languages she does, which mostly in Russia, like, fancy, rich Russians in Moscow would go to these fancy international schools that are already in a certain language and offer more languages. And in that case, it would not be called Saint Mary's or whatever. It would have, like, a boring international school, blah, blah, blah name. Then they go to a park. This was not filmed in Russia. I Googled it, and it's Carroll Park is what the website said. But it's a park in Bucharest. And I get what they're going for, because, yeah, Nea, you mentioned that it looks very Eastern European, and, like, to me, it gave very much Park Pobiedy vibes, which is a big park in Moscow. But it is also very specific, both Park Pobiedy and this park. And while the vibes are similar, it's still filmed, like, the details are there and you can see them, and it's just a bit too obvious of, like, this not matching. So I don't love that.
Yeah, they just, like, put a literal Romanian landmark
in basically.
This episode.
Yeah.
Saying that this is in Moscow.
Yeah, like, you can just make shots that are not as wide and stuff.
I did. Part of me is like, it doesn't matter so much, like, it doesn't matter for the show. But then, on the other hand, like, I don't know, putting a French landmark and pretending it's in Britain, that would look ridiculous
to
anyone.
Yeah.
Woof, so are we saying it's already time to rate the episode?
Yes. I think we are.
My rating for this episode is the movie Booksmart, and it's because people in this episode were being dumbasses a lot. Like Villanelle in the gondola and Geraldine crying on the floor and Eve with her smelly situation. Oh, and Villanelle in the garden. So,
and Nico getting killed.
And Nico getting killed.
My rating for this episode is the novel by Zoe Withall, Holding Still for as Long as Possible. And I read this book very many years ago at this point, and I remember nothing. So the reason I chose it is because it's told from different characters' perspectives, and their stories do intersect and connect at some points, but they are also, like, separate stories that stand on their own. And I do remember really liking the book when I read it.
I chose the book The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Smart!
Thank you, I am. No, I'm not.
Leave in I am and edit out no, I'm not.
I choose this because it's a book that I loved, and I loved this episode. I just think it's so well done. And also because there's kind of like a mystery going on. And also, there are acknowledged relationships with men, but a woman is the love of the person's life.
And it also makes sense kind of in the format, in a way, because there's, like, chapters, and each chapter is based around one person-ish.
And there are different timelines, because we get, like, the interviewing and then going back to the past. So, yeah, I did really well.
Nice.
And it's a great book that I recommend.
It's great.
So, it's time to play a game.
Today's game is, what would the cake that you would send to the love of your life look like or be shaped like?
Beautiful and difficult question.
Yeah, depends a bit on who the love of my life is, but
hopefully, yeah.
A little bit. I'm just gonna imagine a generic love of my life. It would be shaped like the apple from the Twilight book cover.
I think a hammer and a sickle.
Cool.
Yeah.
Mine would be shaped like a Fabergé egg.
Love it! Love it!
So the important part is that the outside, it would be one type of cake. And then when you opened it, it would like have a surprise.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Queering Eve. We will record another one. We release new episodes every Tuesday evening. Have a nice week, and remember to always forward that email.
Megan says, hello, podcast. So I would just like to say, hello, Megan.